All right, welcome back.
Welcome back. I'm still Christopher Harrison. I'm still John Galloway.
Yep.
And
so we've been talking this morning. We talked about what is MVC. We did kind of the high-level view. We talked about what are models and what are controllers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one downside of that is we haven't seen a whole lot of views, and so we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes.
Right.
But we still need to get something out on the screen, right?
Yep.
We need to get something in the browser. So that's views.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about developing MVC for views. And one thing that'll be a little different here is you were writing a lot of code by hand. I'm going to start with scaffolding. So I'll show that scaffolding experience that makes it easy to kind of generate some edit forms and things right out of the box.
Yep, so. Exactly.
So we're going to be talking about in this module creating views with Razor syntax. I'm going to be showing again via scaffolding, but the Razor syntax, pretty lightweight. That's that syntax that allows you to write HTML code and drop in a little bit of C# code inline.
Yep.
We'll talk about HTML helpers, and those are great for helping you keep your view, keeping code out of your view, right?
Yes.
You want your view to be lightweight, HTML only, and that'll help you do that.
Yep.
And then finally, we'll talk about reusing code in views, allowing you to use little bits of views in other places, right?
Excellent.
So we've got the Razor syntax. And for Razor syntax, we'll be looking over basically what that syntax is. Anything to add on this?
No, we'll take a look at how to set up our views. We'll talk a little bit about Razor syntax, how that's going to help simplify things that if you've done maybe earlier versions of MVC and you've been using the ASP.NET tags to do that, you'll see the Razor, while it's certainly much more terse, it is a much easier way in the long run to manage and handle things. And we'll finally actually see some data displayed out on the screen, which will be wonderful.
Great. Okay, so if we can go back to the slides, this is kind of the experience when you add in a view. You can right-click and add view. You saw me do that before with the controller action, right-click and MV, make view. And the idea is we're just adding in a simple view and dropping it in there.
Yep.
Now, the Razor syntax, we've just kind of danced around it a little bit before. It's HTML with some code, right?
Yep.
So I love this slide here. This shows kind of some important things about it. Number one, if you look down at the bottom where we've got item.name, so that is kind of the simplest case, right?
Yes.
I just say @ and then I can write out my code. I could say datetime.now, or I could say whatever, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, whatever is accessible via code at that point, you can access it. You just simply put the @ in front of it, and that's what tells the Razor engine, hey, this what's about to come next is code.
Yep. Now, this bit up at the top is really key, and this kind of points out a bit about it. Normally, if I did that bit of code at the top where I said price including sales tax and I said @ModelPrice x1.2, it's going to show the price, and then it's actually going to show the characters x1.2.
Yes, right? Yeah, it would actually put up the asterisk, the 1.2, it's not actually going to do the math.
Right, and the reason there is that it sees those spaces between code and HTML, and it says you're back into HTML. Most of the time, that's great. You can say, hello, username, it's great to have you here, and you don't have to switch back and forth.
Exactly.
Which was actually kind of frustrating for me back in web forms days when I had to switch back and forth. So that is great. If you do have cases where you need to, do something more complex, then you can say @ and wrap in parentheses.
Yep.
You can also, you see down at the bottom, we've got braces there, and you can put in a bunch of code, but you can switch back and forth between HTML and C# code, and it automatically figures it out there. If there's HTML on the line, it's obviously HTML, and that's what we render.
Yeah, it really blows me away to this very day how good the Razor syntax is at picking up what it is that you're trying to do, that you just simply put in your @ where needed, and it generally does a great job figuring out, oh, okay, this is code, oh, okay, this is HTML. It's remarkable.
So the main thing that I tell people when they're learning Razor syntax, they get all worried and they say, where's the language reference? How am I going to learn Razor and all that? Don't do that. Start by just saying it's HTML. When I want to run some code or drop in a C# property, something from my model, I say @ and I type in the model. When you use my dots and all that, I get my IntelliSense. And then I go right back to writing HTML. So it's HTML that's easy to put C# code into.
Yep.
And that's really it. So we're going to show some other things about Razor syntax in here, ways to escape things and that kind of thing. But really, don't overcomplicate it. This is easy stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay? Not launching rockets here.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, here you can bind to something. So here we've got a strongly typed view. And this is the idea where we're passing in a model, and we're at the top, we say at model, and then we can say my model type, it could be an integer, mm-hmm. it could be a string, it could be an IEnumerable of product, mm-hmm. it could be a view model, whatever. So this is where I tell Razor,
yep.
I am going, whenever I say model, this is what I mean,
yep.
right? So then later in that page, I can say for each var product and model, and the Razor parser says, okay, you've already told me we're strongly typed,
yep.
so I know I have an IEnumerable of type product,
yep.
and it's going to iterate right through that. And then I get my IntelliSense, right? So then I can say at product.name, and it's filling that in for me.
Exactly, exactly.
So, I mean, that's really it. And this is kind of the power of using strongly typed views, because then you're not doing a lot of casting, you're not doing a lot of hoping that mm-hmm. you spelled the view bag property correctly or whatever. It's
yeah.
strongly typed.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, somebody actually asked in the chat window some of the downsides to using the view bag, and it's exactly like John just mentioned there, that with the view bag, everything is done dynamically. So when you say view bag dot, the IntelliSense is not going to give you anything because it's being generated, well, dynamically. So if we can tell the view right up front, hey, this is going to be your object, and again, if we've taken the additional step of creating the view model, we can have everything inside that object. So we're going to get our IntelliSense. We're going to get our strong typing. We're going to get compiler errors, which are always much more preferable to runtime errors. I mean, much more preferable is no errors, but you know, that's a different conversation.
It's a good second place.
Exactly, exactly.
And one other thing, you can even you can set up in your project file, and it's more advanced of a feature, but you can say pre-compile my views, and you'll actually get build errors if you misspell something in a strongly typed view.
Exactly.
With dynamic, that code's executed when the page is viewed, right?
Right.
So yep. so this is a way that you can, you know, it's all the benefits of strong typing.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So I think at that point we're into creating some views, and let's just go for it. So I'm going to drop into Visual Studio, and we're going to be working off that same conference project. I've copied it off of Christopher's machine, and my main goal here is to destroy this project beyond recognition. So
Christopher debug it again later.
Exactly. So let's see how badly I can do that. Now, Christopher has very nicely written up a bunch of controllers and, you know, scaffold, or he's written all this stuff out by hand.
I did that at break. I just wrote that speaker controller and watch what's about
I'm
to
sorry.
Happen.
I'm sorry. So I'm accidentally going to hit the delete button, and then I'm also going to hit this delete button.
Whoa.
And then I'm going to go down into views, and I guess we can keep the views, right?
Okay. All right. Internally, I'm crying. I just want you to know that.
So have I destroyed pretty much everything you've done at this point?
Well, with the
pretty
exception
close.
Of the model,
pretty
yeah,
close.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's start with that. We have speakers, and speakers have a list of sessions, and then we have sessions, and the session has a speaker.
Yep.
So I actually do have a bit of a chicken and the egg problem here, right?
Right.
And so I might actually, to get started, I might make it so that speakers don't have sessions or something like that.
Okay.
I'm going to do that, just so we can start playing around with getting speakers in place.
Yep.
So there we go. So now I am going to create a controller and the associated views mm-hmm. the easy way, right? So I want to have something that has a speaker. I want to be able to enter their name and email address. And I want to validate that, you know, it's a proper email address and all
yep.
that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So I'm going to right-click on speakers. Oh, and I should point out, too, we don't have a database at this point yet.
No, we still haven't. Yeah, you'll notice we haven't actually run code yet. We've built it, but we haven't actually run code. And there's been a lot of questions about, hey, when is this database going to be created? That's what the initializer is going to do. But the initializer is only going to get called once we touch that context while running for the first time. And since we haven't actually run code, we haven't actually touched the context yet, there is still no database yet.
Yep, yep. Actually, so it looks like we do have one, and I'm going to delete it, right? This database, I'm just going to go delete
yeah, that.
That
was created for the membership.
When that seed, yeah,
yep.
okay.
Yep.
All right, so I think I am in a great position here to destroy this project. So I'm going to start by I'm going to right-click on controllers.
You're taking such glee in this.
Okay, so I'm going to scaffold the speaker controller, okay?
Yep.
So I want to go in and be able to create speakers. So I'm going to say, one thing I want to do before this is I need to build my project, and that's because the next screen that pops up is going to say, which model do you want to use? And if I haven't built, I'm not going to see that on the list.
Right.
Okay. So here I'm going to say I want a speaker controller. And then I'm going to say, instead of an empty MVC controller, which is what you've seen all day so far, I'm going to create an MVC controller, MVC controller with read-write actions. So that's this guy right there. So I have a lot of options. I can do, you know, empty, I can do MVC controller, I can make it just empty read-write actions. So here, this is the very simplest case, right? Mm-hmm. So I am going to use the speaker model. And because I built the project, then it just goes through and it looks at what are all the classes in my application.
Right.
So then I'm going to, now I think we already have a context. We have conference context. If we did not have that, I could say create a context for me. Right?
Right.
And it would create that context. So now I am going to say add. Now what's going to happen when I do this is it's going to create that controller. And it's also going to create all the associated views.
Yep.
Because I've said I want read-write actions and views. Okay, mm-hmm. So let's see what we get. Hopefully it's pretty close to that lovingly handcrafted code that you just wrote up. So now we've got the spinning blue circle of patience. But you don't have to wait that long. That's what I've heard it called there. So here we've got a controller. So we've also got a bunch of views that popped up, and that was actually pretty quick.
Yeah.
So I'm going to
considering the amount of work that it did.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to tour through this. Now this is using scaffolding. We've had some questions. This is the scaffolding system that shipped. I forget even now which version it started shipping with, but this is scaffolding in MVC, and there's a new, better scaffolding system coming out with the next release of Visual Studio, mm-hmm. And part of the reason is scaffolding has been really popular in MVC, and now that feature is also coming over to WebForms,
yep.
And it's the same scaffolding system for WebForms, MVC, Web API, everything. And so, and it's also going to be extensible. It's been kind of written for that in mind. So here's, first of all, we've got a context that's at the controller level, and then within this, I've got an index, so I want to see, you know, a list of all my speakers.
Yep.
Okay, and then we've got things, so if we just look at a high level, we've got details. Details is going to take an ID, it's going to get it from the database, and it's going to return that model to the view. And again, following, this looks just like the code you wrote, right? This is a...
Just like it.
Okay.
With the exception of the HTTP not found. But
Yeah. So this might even be, you know, in some ways a little better.
Hey.
Okay.
I'm sitting right here.
Okay. So then this has, you know, create, read, update, delete, all that stuff.
Yep.
Okay. So we're not digging into this in more detail.
Nope.
I just want to set that up to show you that is what goes behind these views.
Yep.
So here I've got the index view. This is going to display a list of speakers from the database. So this is coming off of the get action method.
Yep.
So the get action method is going to call into my context. It's going to call into the DB set of speakers. And it's going to enumerate it. So it's going to get a list.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to return that model to the view.
Yep.
And this, since this is the index action, then it's going to follow the conventions. So it's going to say, I am looking for a view. And my view is in the, so it says, I'm looking, well, it seems to, my foo is not that great. Okay, so I'm looking for a view, and my view is going to be in the speaker folder. So this is, you know, it's a speaker view, so it's in the speaker controller, so it's in the speaker folder.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to look for the index view, because that matches the action name.
Yep.
Okay. So now let's go back over to that. So here's that view. So this is strongly typed, that magical strongly typed thing, extreme zoom there. So it is strongly typed, an enumerable of speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to, this page looks a lot like standard HTML. The important point I want to point out here is this down here. So this is going to do a for each over the model.
Mm-hmm.
It's enumerable, so we can do that.
Yep.
And then it's going to call, these are HTML helpers. We'll
yep.
talk about that in a bit. And this is just going to say display the item name.
Yep.
So here I could say item dot, and I got all my stuff here. right? So I've got the name, I've got the ID and the email address. Now notice that it's smart enough to say you don't want to display your primary key.
Yep, right? Exactly.
So there's some basic intelligence behind this, and it's saying, okay, your primary key, we're going to keep track of that, but we're not going to display it on the screen to edit.
Exactly.
So now, I think I'm ready to run this. What could go wrong?
Well, there's only one way to find out what could go wrong.
So this is going to spin up. Now, in order to view that speaker controller, so if you can think ahead what I need to do, I need to go to the speakers page, right? Speaker can't be displayed.
Oh, you know why? We're really cooking here on this
we
show.
Are.
This go back to your filter config.
Beautiful.
I left behind the require HTTPS.
That was defensive coding there. That was beautiful there. Okay. One up for you, sir.
Yes.
Well played. Okay. So again, that was because he put in that require SSL filter, and so that ran before my code. That was a way he could trick me before I had a chance to fight back. So now,
see, that's what you get for deleting everything.
Okay. So now I've requested speaker. So what's happening now actually is it's creating this database. So the initializer fired up and it's created this database here.
Yep.
So this is actually, Well, so it's created this database on the fly. Okay. So, and this is based off that seed data. So, yep. So again, everyone's like, when are you going to make the database happen? This is the database. And so I think, did you put that seed in the global ASAX?
Yes. I called that there. And then if you go back
it's
up
in
into
the initializer.
Model, yeah.
Yep.
The initializer, just scroll up just a scooch, and you'll see that over on the right-hand side.
Yep. Okay. So there we go. So there's my initializer. So this was code that is handy to write because I can immediately start testing views, and I've already got something there.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So what's happened is the controller runs. The controller says database. First of all, it says db.speakers.
Mm-hmm.
When it accesses db.speakers, that's when the lazy loading happens, and it creates that, and it fires up, and it requests, it does that data query.
Yep.
And then it passes that to this strongly typed view, and the strongly typed view is displaying all this stuff.
Yep.
Great. So now I'm going to create a new one. And my speaker name is going to be blank, and my email is going to be 55. That doesn't work, right?
Right. Well, because it's not 55.
Because that's not a valid email address.
Exactly.
Right? So that is one of those things where, because you set that up, and I wonder, will this happen? If I popped up the touch, that's, I think, where it would even like show that kind of like there's the .com there, right?
Yep, exactly. And then you'll notice the at on the left side of the keyboard.
Yep.
Yep, so if
there
you
it is.
Click back in there,
there's
there
that
go.
Sign, yep. Right? So that's that HTML5 magical stuff, right? And so this is because you put this attribute, this data annotation attribute on the speaker class. So I'm trying to open every single tab I can. So that's because this is data type email address.
Yep.
That flows all the way through.
One of the little things to keep in mind, so it did generate the input type equals email. One of the nice things is that if you just simply said input type equals Wibble, it's going to simply give you a text box. So while you're not going to get that cool little HTML5 capability there, it'll still give you a text box. So even if they are using an older browser that doesn't support it, they'll still be able to work with this page.
Right. Great. Okay. So so let's take a look here. We have, this is also, the speaker name's required. So let's test that out real quick. So I'm going to put in a valid email. So I'll do john.galloway@microsoft. And I'm going to be, I don't want to give a name. So at this point, when I submit it, that's when that validation happens. It says, this is a required field.
Yep.
So so this is all that kind of front end thing. And I've actually, you already created me in the database.
I did already create you.
So I'm going to put Christopher.
With an H.
All right. And you're going by the first name today, and you're going to be Geek Trainer?
CHarrison@geektrainer.com.
Okay, watch this validation as it updates. It's pretty cool. Immediately, right, there's that AJAX validation. Okay, so now when I hit create, I'm going to set a breakpoint in the controller. And we're kind of bouncing between views and controllers. But this is the create post, right? So now when I hit this create, so we have a speaker object, okay? And so this is, and it dims out when I hit that control button.
You gotta be really fast on it.
Yeah.
Like lightning fast.
I don't know if I can do that. Do you hit the control one, just boom?
Yeah, control one, just, as fast as you possibly can.
That doesn't happen. Well, so that is I have a speaker object. Here, I can expand
you can zoom in down there. There you go.
Okay.
It's so much cooler when you just mouse over it.
I know. So this is that model binding, and this is the form post then was bound back, and then we can say, is it valid?
Yep.
And in this case, the AJAX validation already made sure that happened.
It did, but of course the AJAX validation could be spoofed or otherwise,
right.
So you'll notice it still does it on the server.
And that's a really important point is, people say, I don't really need to do this, I'm just going to use an AJAX validation library.
Yeah.
Well, anyone can go into their browser and monkey with the HTML and post it back.
Yep.
And then, so it's important to have client-side and server-side validation.
Yep.
Client-side is to help your users out. Server-side is to make sure that people aren't messing with you and they're passing the right data.
Exactly.
Or that the JavaScript wasn't turned off or whatever, right? And then it's important to keep those all in sync, your client-side and your server-side. And that's where that putting your annotations on your model makes it all really kind of come together nicely.
Yep. Right?
So now I'm just going to hit F5. I want to keep mostly focused on views here. But you'll see we created that and passed it to the view. Right. So now let's look at that create view. And we're going to see that this view is has a bunch of HTML helpers again.
It does.
So interrupt me when you want to talk about those. But basically, we have helpers here for things like HTML.editor4.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Oh no. We do have our slides coming up, but we can do this now. So what you're going to notice there is we've got our HTML helper, and you'll notice that it calls out editor4. Mm-hmm. And what I love about editor4 is the fact that it's going to, once again, use the annotations. So it's going to go back to the annotations and say, what are you? And then based on what it gets back, it will then automatically create what it thinks is appropriate for a default editor. So in the case of just normal text, it'll give us a text box. In the case of like our abstract, where that was multi-line, it'll actually give us a text area. Mm-hmm. In the case of Boolean, it'll automatically give us a checkbox. So once again, going back to the annotations, I say this is what the data type is, and MVC will then look at that and create the editor that's going to be appropriate for that. Again, we're helping MVC help us.
Perfect. Yeah, so that, and that's a great example too. Here, this says HTML.label4, and we pass in the email address. So this is just going to write an email, it's going to write out HTML that says, email.
Exactly.
So you might think, why would I use a helper there? I can just write, a label and put in the word email. But remember that on our speaker, we used an annotation and we said display name equals email.
Yep.
And so if we look onto the form on this create, you'll actually see that says email.
Yep.
Right? So that's kind of the benefit there. You don't have to use these helpers, but they really come in handy.
Exactly. The other thing that the label will do for you is it'll actually set up the label tag. So that way when you click on it, it'll automatically take you to the text box. And that's really key when you're talking about touch devices, which, in case you haven't noticed, those are starting to become a little more popular.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yep.
And that way...
Including phones, right?
Yeah,
that's a big thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So regardless of where it is, when you touch on it, it will then go to the text box as well.
Yep.
Yep.
And, tiny little point there, but, we talk about things like phones. These are built using responsive design. So these, when you build an MVC4 application, this will actually shrink down and it resizes intelligently to fit.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So that is something that we don't have time to dig into much, but the templates that come with MVC4 are built for that responsive design.
Exactly. And it is a good reason to use those templates. I know if you're anything like me, and I know I am, I have a tendency to just simply say, hey, I can do it better. Let me just go in and build it from scratch. But the templates that are built in have done a lot of work for you, so you could still take advantage of what's there. But again, everything's exposed, so you could still modify it. The templates are actually pretty cool.
Pretty slick, yep.
Yeah.
So should we jump into the slides and then pop back into the code a little bit?
Yeah.
So that, hopefully my Shift F5 hitting works.
Yep. It'll get there.
Maybe I'll do a little dance. There's a little lag here, so it's to keep me on my toes here. Okay, so we did our little demo. We created some views. My point there was twofold. One, we wanted to look at some actual view code.
Yep.
See some Razor code in action.
Yep.
See that it was mostly HTML with little at signs and little bits of code here and there, calling mm-hmm. helpers and things. And also, I wanted to show you how to play.
Yes.
You know, that's been the most helpful for me in learning MVC is writing a bunch of code.
Yep.
File new project, internet application, create a model, right-click scaffold, and just yep. play with it.
Exactly. Know? Exactly. So. Yeah.
Okay.
So what you're going to notice here is one of the big keys that we talked about earlier is the fact that Razor does a magnificent job of figuring out what's code and what's not code. The problem, though, is sometimes Razor isn't quite able to figure it out, or sometimes you need an at sign, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you've got your different escape sequences. So you'll notice that an individual at sign, of course, for C#. If you do want just a normal at sign, at, we'll do that for you. For a particular line, if you want to force it into just treating it all as text, then you could say at and then a colon. Everything after that will be text. And then if you've got a block, then it's going to require the text tag. So that way you could put in whatever at signs and everything else it is that that you might need.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other really interesting little things is this, that if you remember from John's demo that he just walked through, he had things like at model.name. And it automatically displayed out the name. One of the cool things that it's doing is it's automatically doing an HTML encoding, which is to say that any text that's being passed or being printed out is going to be converted into something safe. So if somebody put in a less than and a greater than sign, the HTML encoding will automatically swap that out with the ampersand LT and the ampersand GT. That way, it's just simply going to display the text on the page and not treat it like HTML.
You know what? Let's play with that. I'm going to go back into Visual Studio, and
yeah.
I'll bring up that application. And I will just I will create a user. So we'll create a user whose name is Script.
That's a funny name.
It is.
Little Bobby Tables.
I noticed. Yeah, exactly. Mr. Script likes to, you know, and then I could say it's, you know, alert, you know. Right? So
yep.
this is why that's important, right? That HTML
yep.
encoding. And then I'll just say a at a.com because I like to follow the rules,
yep.
right? So now when I hit create, well, first of all,
yeah,
that was hit
yeah,
by validation.
Yeah.
But even if I go in and I disable that at the form level,
yep.
this is still going to, when it outputs that. So that's an important point, actually, is that you can, there's validation checking on the way
right.
in. But you also need to validate on the way out.
Exactly.
Because things can get snuck into your database. You
mm-hmm.
never can trust your data. And
yep.
so if this data was inserted into my database,
yep.
then when it's displayed, it's going to be encoded correctly for the display, which
exactly.
is important when it's important.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Everybody always thinks about the data coming in and, oh, my user sent this to me. I shouldn't trust this. But
right.
a lot of times people will forget about the fact that, well, somebody could have maybe bypassed the validation, put that into the database directly. So even though it's in the database, doesn't necessarily mean that it is, in fact, safe.
Yep.
Yep.
So for those few times where you do want to show HTML, maybe some sort of editor where you want to allow people to put in HTML, then you would use HTML.raw to display
yep.
it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So we already talked about a lot of HTML helpers. And what I kind of like about this, we're recapping them here.
Yes.
But I like that, you know, you can see them in action. You can
yep.
scaffold something and you can see, instead of, you know, looking at slides and trying to understand why do I care about helpers, we saw some helpers and saw how they generated the right HTML, the right form fields, the right, you know, like a smart text box that knows it's for email with
yep.
the validation.
Exactly.
That's why helpers are helpful.
Exactly.
Helpful helpers.
It's not just a clever name.
Right, right. Okay, so there are a lot of them in here, and we'll just kind of go through.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a few of these?
Sure. So the first of all, you'll notice that we've got our HTML action link and our URL action. So the HTML action link, that's going to generate, just like it shows right there, the full anchor tag to take you to another page. So if you remember back to the little screen that John had up a couple minutes ago where there was a link for create or there was a link for details. So if John would have clicked on that, that actually would have brought up the details for a particular speaker. Mm-hmm. The way that those links are being generated is by utilizing HTML action link. What's really neat about HTML action link is, John was talking about routing before. Let's say I go in and I create a custom route for speakers and I say that I want it to be /speaker/42. Well, I don't want to run around and now update all my links to use that shorthand that I've created in my route. The HTML action link will automatically handle that for me. You'll notice down below the difference between that and the URL action. That on URL action, all that it will give me is just the URL. It won't generate the anchor tag to go along with it. So that way, if maybe, like they're sort of simulating in the example here, if I've got images maybe in a database and I'm trying to pull them out, I could go in, create my action, that returns back the image from the database. I need to make sure that I've got that URL for the SRC tag inside my image tag. Now, you'll notice that we just simply say URL action, and that will just give us the URL, not the anchor tag.
Great. Yeah, that was a really key point, again, that, you know, this is following, this is working, this has some understanding of your routing.
Exactly.
And that's the real key advantage, as opposed to hard coding things in the views. People ask me again and again, I can write HTML, why would I use a helper? And it's because this understands routing, it understands your model, it understands all these things. And so it's able to kind of smartly, you know, generate the right HTML for
you. Exactly. Yep. So the next little spot is display name for and display for. So up at the very top, you'll notice display name for. Again, that's going to read that out of the data annotation. I think we've beat that into the ground. I think we're good there.
But notice there, the created space date.
Yes.
So if people have created date with no space, you know that they're
slipping
on that one.
Yeah, so you'll notice again, you know, we put in the annotation, put in a space. The other part you'll notice down below is the HTML display for. There would actually be, using the example that's on the slide there, two ways to display out the created date from the model. One way would just be to simply say at model.createdDate, and it would display the date. Mm-hmm. The other way to do it is by using display for. Again, this would go back to the annotation. So if you remember, we had highlighted in a previous deck, in a previous slide, the ability with an annotation to say this is the display format that we want. The HTML display for will pull that. So if we go in and we say through the format that we want that to be day, month, year, or month, day, year, that's where it's going to pull that in from. So this, it's a subtle difference, but it's a very important one.
And this is one of those things where even if you don't think you need it at the time, it's nice to have them there because if you later think, oh no, I need to go through and change all of these throughout the thing, if you're using the helpers, it's all set up for you. It's 2 seconds. If you've hard coded all your HTML, you've got a lot of typing, right? No fun. Okay, so back to the slides here. So this is the begin form helper. And again, this will write out a begin and end tag for your form.
Exactly. Yeah, this will put in the begin, this will put in the end. You'll also notice through the parameters, we can identify the method that we're going to use. We can identify the action and the controller that we're going to use. Now, one very important thing that I want to highlight, and John, if you don't mind, I'm going to turn you into a code monkey here.
All right, I'm ready.
So if you want to get out of the slides and go back to Visual Studio here, we got a question on this in the chat. I want to make sure that we get it.
Getting all ready here.
Yep.
Okay.
Stretching.
Yes.
Very important.
All right, I'm ready.
We don't want any sprained fingers here.
No, I'm ready.
Okay, so go back to the create view inside of Speaker.
All right. The create
the view.
Or the create the view.
Yeah, the view. Yeah, let's start there.
Yep.
Go all the way to the top for me. Now, you'll notice the using HTML begin form, and I want you to highlight, first of all, I want you to highlight the HTML anti-forgery token.
That is such a key point, and I was about to talk about that if you hadn't.
Great minds think alike. So one of the things that we have to be very careful about is, again, spoofing. And somebody can spoof a form, and so they could be sending us information from somewhere else rather than the form that we've generated. We want to prevent this from happening. This is where the HTML anti-forgery token comes into play. That sort of like the name implies, and this is an oversimplification, but this will set up a token on that form that's going to be hash signed and otherwise with the machine key. So that way it can only come back to us. Now, this is actually a two-part thing. Number one, the token needs to be written, and that's what you're seeing there on line 10. The token is now being written. Now, CodeMonkey, if you'd be so kind as to go into our speaker controller, you'll notice on the speaker controller on the validate, just up top, right there on 49, there's the other side. That's where it's actually going to confirm that the token is in fact correct.
Okay. So the whole point of this, if I hop over to, oops, that's not it. If I run this, the idea is if I've got my create form, mm-hmm. and it accepts a form post to create a speaker, right? Mm-hmm. So I've got, anyone could copy this HTML.
Exactly.
And put it up on evilsite.com and put in speaker name. Well, maybe make it a little smarter than that.
A little more surreptitious.
Right?
Yes.
But they could make it post that form action here. They could go into the form action and point it at wherever they want. So they could say, well, I want my form to point at, instead of posting back to evilsite.com, they could edit their HTML and say, no, point it back to this conference session.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's where they can get in and monkey with all this stuff,
yep.
right? So the point is that when you use that anti-forgery token, and again, that's put in by scaffolding for you, so it encourages you to do the right thing, then it's going to write out in the page, it's going to write out a hidden field, and it's going to validate that when it's posted back.
Exactly.
And so somebody else that copies your HTML, well, that field's no longer going to be valid when it's served from their site.
Exactly.
It's not going to match.
Yep. So. That's it.
Great. Okay. Back to slides?
Yeah, back to slides.
All right. So there's that begin form helper.
Yep.
That makes it easy to, set up your forms.
And while the slide's up, just real quick, we got asked this one more time, and so it's worth hitting it again. Somebody asked, why use the HTML helpers? Again, what this comes back to is reading out all that metadata that you worked so hard on. So that way, the object itself sort of knows how to display itself. And so the HTML helper will come along, read that information, and then display appropriately. So that way, if anything changes, I go to one location, I go back to the class, and I update that inside of there. I don't have to run around to 15 different views and do my updating inside of there.
Yep. And I want to point out, that the helpers, these HTML helpers, are free. Nobody's making money by selling you on the helpers. Write all your own HTML if you want.
Yeah.
But I just recommend using them. You don't later say, man, I wish I'd hard-coded these. but a lot of time I have said, oh, wow, I am glad that I use the helpers now because I can go in and change the way this is displayed.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
So we've got our label for and our editor for. Both of these we did touch on. I just want to highlight real quick on the label for. You'll notice that it, again, throws in that label tag for us. So that way when you tap on that, it will then take you over to the appropriate text box.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the editor for, again, displaying, this is where it looks at your metadata and it says, well, this is a string, this is required, this is all like multi-line,
And exactly.
It makes it sets that up for you.
Yep. So we've got our validation helpers. The validation summary, just like it shows you there on the slide, will give you a list of, hey, this is everything that you messed up on the form. If you're wanting to put something next to the actual control itself, that's where the validation message for comes into play. So that way, next to the text box, I can make sure that it displays, hey, you need to give me a name, or hey, that doesn't look like a good email address.
Yep. So the next demo is creating that create page, and we already kind of did that.
Yeah.
I think maybe we could take one more quick look back in the code, and I'll just point out all those helpers. We'll recap all those helpers we talked about, and then we can kind of finish up with partial views.
That's perfect.
Sound good? Okay, so if I go back into my code here, let's look at some of these. So if we go into the create, let's just kind of recap some. We've got this begin form that we talked about that sets up the form. We've got our anti-forgery token, so this is what writes out that token into the HTML. We've got the validation summary, and then this, I forget what this override is there. That says exclude property errors. Okay. good enough. So anyways, that's...
So that way, so what that'll do is, let's say that I go in and I go to create a brand new item and it's going to throw it into a database, and the database fails. So all of that will then appear up at the very top.
Right.
If somebody has, you know, fat-fingered an email address, we want to just display that next to the item. So that's what the true-false there is.
Perfect, thanks.
Yep.
Okay, so then below that, we've got our, so the validation summary, again, displays a summary of everything that went wrong on the page.
Yep.
Inside the page, we've got html.label4. And this syntax here with the lambda, this is just a kind of a lightweight way of saying, I want the model name.
Exactly. Right? There was actually a question about this in the chat window. Like, why do we have that? And mm-hmm. what we're doing, it's sort of a difference between saying, hey, display the name here, and telling the label for, in this case, this is the property that I want you to use. That's what that is doing right there.
Yeah. So this actually, yeah. Otherwise, if we said at model name, mm-hmm. that would actually contain the string with the person's name.
Right.
We don't want that. We want the
yep.
type.
Yep.
And so if we say model.name, that passes actually the type information about that property up to the label for.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
So, and you know, the good news, you don't really have to care too much, you know, about that. I mean, I guess a better way of saying that is you don't completely have to understand the lambda expression in order for it to work.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So then, so there's label for, editor for, and then validation message for. And the key thing there is validation message for is at the property level. So not inside of each, or not at the top. You've got your summary at the top and then
yep.
validation message for at the bottom.
Exactly.
So then we just, you know, we iterate through. We've got all these. And then here's another one. You mentioned that action link.
Yep.
So this is, in order to go back to the list, this is what displays that link. And that's it's routing aware. So it's going to say, if I want to go to the index method,
yep.
this is going to display a link to the index method for this controller.
Exactly. And it's actually smart enough that John brought up the default routing. And you'll notice on the default routing that it will default to index. So when it goes to create that link, it's not going to say whack speaker, whack index. It's just simply going to say whack speaker because it's smart enough to use the routing and it's smart enough to know, oh, well, I can just simply count on the default. So it yep. won't actually say speaker, whack index. It'll just simply say speaker.
Yep. Okay, I want to point out partials, and the way I want to do that is actually using what's built in.
Okay.
So I'm going to go into, if we look at the shared, we haven't talked about shared, but shared is where things that are common across the application. View information is common across mm-hmm. the application. So if you look in this view, it just has a form. But if you look, do I have it running? It actually says this your logo here. It has all these links and all that. So where is that coming from? And that's actually in the layout.
Yep.
So if you're used to web forms, this is like the, master page.
There you go.
Those brain cells were almost dead.
It's okay. Almost like, get this man some spaghetti.
So this is the, kind of like the master page, right?
Yep.
This is the layout. And so this goes through and it has all the information and then it makes this magical call to render body.
Yep.
And when we call render body, that's when the actual view itself is rendered.
Yep.
But if we look back at the top, we have all these things that say HTML.partial. So here, or one thing here, we've got HTML.partial login partial. And that's because across throughout the site, we have these login blocks up at the top here.
Yep.
Login and register. I guess I can make those bigger. So this calls HTML.partial, and that is actually similar to a user control in web forms.
Yep.
So if we look at login.partial, this is just a small little view.
Yep.
Right? And one thing I want to point out is that both of these start with an underscore. The reason for the underscore there is people can't log in, or you can't directly request any of those views.
Exactly.
Right? Those views
yep.
are not going to be served up by anything. So right. if it's got the underscore, that's the convention for that.
Yep.
So we've got underscore layout, which is used across the site. That's kind of the master page. And then we have
yep.
Underscore login partial. That's just a partial view. And to display that partial, we simply do a back in the layout, we just do HTML.partial.
Yep.
And you can also do, render partial, you can do render action, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And so those are if you want to return the result of a view, or if you want to return a view, you do render view,
mm-hmm.
or you can do render action, and that'll actually call back in and run an action and kind of fill in information for a small spot.
Yep, right? Exactly, yeah.
So that's the idea of partials. So here we've got, you know, the layout is in, the layout kind of contains everything for the, mm-hmm. the page. And then you've got the view itself. And then you've got the partials where you can plug in little bits across it.
Exactly. Yeah, it also gives you your reuse mm-hmm. that you're always looking for. So if I know that I'm going to be displaying a speaker in multiple places, then what I can do is just create that partial view and then just keep using that over and over and over again. You know, which again goes back to that whole theme, reuse.
Reuse.
Yes.
Don't repeat yourself. Put the code in one place. Don't have a lot of hard-coded stuff, right?
Exactly.
So, yep. So I mean, is that about it? I think we've...
The only... I think we've basically...
I've got one other thing somebody asked. Actually, I remember. Somebody asked in the chat about Razor V2 syntax.
Okay, sure.
So Razor V2 syntax... is an update, I think that came out about a year ago, and it simplifies a few things. None of them are huge. I'm pointing here to Andrew Nurse's blog post. Andrew Nurse, who wrote the Razor parser, so respectable fellow.
Yeah, and, might know what he's talking about.
Yeah. But some of the things that it does is it makes it simpler to do things like, instead of, if you... It's a little bit smarter about things that you're going to render. For instance,
right.
You can do tilde slash, and it will automatically fill in that reference.
Exactly.
Or another thing that's a common pain point is conditional attributes. So here, if you've got a CSS class that you want to fill in, but if it doesn't exist, you don't want to say class equals empty string, right?
Right.
So because of that, with Razor V2, if you say, if you say that, I'm going to have to get some training from you on Zoom it over lunch. So if you say this class underscore at class, it'll fill it in if it's there. Otherwise, that whole class attribute will be blank.
Okay.
So just, you know, some nice things, not a huge big deal to know, but we've had a few people ask about that.
Yep. Definitely worth highlighting.
So I guess we could wrap up on the end of the slides here.
Sure. Yeah. You want to bring back up the slides?
Yeah. All right.
So
spinning up.
Yep.
All right. So so we've got partial views. So we talked about HTML.partial.
Yep.
Passing information to that, you can use ViewBag or ViewData again because those aren't strongly typed.
Right.
Your model is going to change across the site.
Yep. And then we had our demo and the requisite Microsoft slide.
So I think now it's a great time for a meal break. Have the appropriate meal for your time zone.
Yes.
And so we will start on the hour, which I believe is roughly 1 Pacific time. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Okay. All right.
Hooray.
We've been exploded out of here.